Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning I'm speaking with Dr. Stephanie Miles Richardson from the Morehouse School of Medicine. Dr. Richardson, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us. Welcome to The Local Take.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk with you about, you know, public and community health. Can we start with a definition? What is public health and how does it differ from our normal definition of our personal health, so to speak?
Sure. Public health is, in its broadest sense, assuring conditions in which people can be healthy. So it's a broader view, but it takes into account individual health, individual behaviors, the knowledge and the attitudes that people have individually, which feeds into social norms and people as a social group, which feeds into community health, which ultimately comprises public health. But the outcome of public health, when we talk about that, increased health of population, we also hear it called population health, and decreased illness. So it's a broader look at what starts at the individual level.
And now I know public health doctors, you know, researchers and epidemiologists, and they are always in action when there's an outbreak of something, Ebola. At other times, I know that they're busy and they're doing other things, but can you tell us what do public health doctors do in normal circumstances?
Right. So, you know, the funny thing about public health is when it is working well, it looks like nothing is happening. People are healthy and happy and all is well. But oftentimes, the general public sees it when there's a challenge. And, of course, you see it when, like now, with the current outbreak of a coronavirus pandemic that we have and other outbreaks that you can think about in the past. So the cornerstone of public health is surveillance. So there are always people gathering information about infectious diseases, about non-infectious diseases, health conditions, about risk factors, about exposures. So there are people who are always collecting that data. And the epidemiologist, their job is to track disease and to track this information. And they work very closely with biostatisticians who help us to understand what the trends are, who help us to understand populations that may be most impacted, community differences, gender differences, race, ethnicity, and all of those kinds of things. So there's always surveillance going on. And so that data goes out to inform policy. There may be changes in policy based on the data. There are lawyers that work in public health. There may be new programs and interventions that need to be implemented based on the data. There are communications involved in public health. So messages may have to be altered for different communities, for example. And certainly, that data helps us understand where research should be so that we can understand, have new knowledge about a given area. So public health is always working. You just see it when it's heightened, when there's a challenge, and folks are paying attention. It's almost like insurance. It's always working in the background. You have it when you need it. We have the data, and we are always looking at health, increasing health, decreasing illness at all times. But again, now, you know, when we have a pandemic, of course, you see a lot more activity around surveillance.
Now, what can you tell us about the self-quarantining orders that most of us are now living under?
Yeah, so the coronavirus that we're experiencing now, there are a couple of ways to address an emerging infectious disease like this. Obviously, one way is vaccination. So because the virus is new, there is no vaccine, although there's work being undertaken to develop one. The other thing is containment. And containment, though, requires one to have been able to test. Because when you test and you find people who are positive, those people are then isolated. And then all of the contacts, you hear about contact tracing, all of the contacts to those people who are isolated are then put into a 14-day quarantine. And if you do that systematically, you can actually contain a virus. That can't happen absent tests. So we're down the road a bit. So where we are is with prevention. That's hand washing 20 seconds or more, and social distancing. So what you're seeing now is a bit more extreme social distancing. And what we're trying to do, you probably heard about flattening the curve. What we're trying to do is reduce the number of new cases. And so if folks would go home, stay in, then the virus does not have the opportunity to go person to person as it is spread, because people are separating from each other. What that will do is that will reduce the number of cases, that will reduce the burden on the healthcare system, and it'll buy us some time so that folks who are developing vaccinations can continue to do that work. So, you know, our federal government is not the kind that would tell everybody to go home. So what you're seeing is this happening jurisdiction by jurisdiction, either at the level of the governor or in some cities, folks putting out orders. But it's really to drive down the number of cases that affect the health system and bother some time.
And that's the flattening the curve that we continue to hear about. If we can slow down the spread of the disease so that everyone isn't impacting the healthcare system, especially while we're still in the influenza system, then we have a chance.
Absolutely. That's what's going on. Yeah.
So now we know about the health disparities that impact our community disproportionately. And it seems that those same health disparities also increase your susceptibility to catching COVID-19. Is this one of the reasons to also not to forget, even though we're, you know, hunkering down and quarantine, you still have to, you know, eat right, exercise, and take care of yourself? And I have to continue to remind myself that you cannot exercise out of a bad diet.
Right. Good point. So the challenge, the larger challenge in African American and other minority and underserved communities is that health disparities, racial and ethnic disparities in health already existed before this coronavirus showed up. And so those contributors to disparities in health include stuff like socioeconomic status, like education, employment, income. It includes lifestyle behaviors, things like whether or not you engage in physical activity or whether or not or how frequently you consume alcohol or even smoking. It includes things like opportunities, educational opportunities, economic opportunities, neighborhood, work, access to primary care for preventive services. All of those contribute to health disparities are differences in health outcome in certain populations. So when those when you have those differences, there are populations that already bear a greater burden of chronic disease. They have what you've heard, comorbidities. That's more than one chronic disease. And so there's already a earlier death. There's already increased quality of life. When you overlay this new emergent infectious disease on top of that, you have folks who are more vulnerable. And so even more important than before, lifestyle behaviors, healthy behaviors are important. So before the coronavirus, the new coronavirus hit, folks needed to take care of their health. Folks needed to be thoughtful about what you're consuming, more plant-based diet, for example, some physical activity. That is even more important now because you want to make sure you're as strong as possible. And it's particularly important for communities who already have a burden of disease because we're just more vulnerable. So, yeah, this is not the time to decide not to practice healthy and to do as much as you can to make sure that you're strong, in addition to, very importantly, washing your hands 20 seconds and staying home.
Now, I've seen the social media memes, and you keep hearing the rumors that African Americans are immune from COVID-19. I don't know how this got started, but why is this such a dangerous rumor in our community?
So, you know, I don't understand it either. I can tell you, though, that this coronavirus is an equal opportunity virus. So nobody has any particular reason not to get it. And in fact, because it is novel or new, no one has any immunity to it. Those persons who have been exposed likely have some antibodies and some immune, but it's equal opportunity. So it's a dangerous game to have that kind of information going on social media, because again, the very community who are saying that are those who are going to be more burdened simply because of the chronic disease and the health disparities that we have that we experience.
So now, Dr. Richardson, just for information, we've got a lot of young folks out there or people who might be interested in this public health field that, as you said, is about surveillance, is about watching things and helping to guide public policy and, you know, different things in community. How did you come to be a public health professional? Why was that of interest to you?
So this is a long journey, but I'm sure we don't have a lot of time. So I will tell you, I started my primary training is veterinary medicine. And so I went into veterinary medicine and engaged in pathology, which is the study of diseases and toxicology through research. So I have a doctorate in veterinary medicine as well as a dual PhD in pathology and toxicology. And I got engaged in public health through research, through applying animal data, research from animal data to matters of human health. And so I spent over a decade at the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, as well as CDC here in Atlanta, before joining Morehouse School of Medicine. So I came into public health through, through the journey of understanding how all of these different professions intersect. So as an example, the COVID virus that we're looking at now that is of concern is a new one, but it appears to have emerged from an animal virus. So there are coronaviruses in animals, there are coronaviruses in people. And the challenge comes when they cross species. That is something that as a veterinarian, I understand very well. Those kinds of viruses, SARS did that, MERS did that. That cross species are a particular challenge and require containment. So my journey through public health is through my understanding of One Health, which is veterinary medicine, human medicine, and our outcomes. And it's also out of my understanding through my experience that certain populations are at greatest risk. And so I've had the opportunity in the last 10 years to be at Morehouse School of Medicine and to direct the public health program where we focus on community health, particularly in underserved communities.
Well, Dr. Stephanie Miles Richardson, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to share with our listeners this morning. You stay safe.
Absolutely.
And take care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you so much.